Blog Talk Radio.
And happy Monday to you. Welcome to Markman Madness here on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. Our producer is Mark Mancini. I'm Mark Heffernan. That's Markman Madness. MMM. Our number 347-205-9631. 347-205-9631. Guess what I did about a week ago? In fact, I've done it twice in a week. Something I've never done before. Watch out. You know what? I'm going to leave that as a question to you. Now, it's something nice. It's appropriate, okay? I know this is a podcast. It's appropriate. What do you think I did in the last week twice that I'd never done before in my life? A hint? I was an entertainer, basically. But what did I actually do in the last week twice that I've never done before in my lifetime? It was kind of a lot of fun. So 347-205-9631. 347-205-9631. Yes, it was appropriate. I mean, for the most part, it was. Congrats to my favorite female athlete, Abby Steiner from Kentucky, University of Kentucky. She actually is from Ohio and a track and field star from UK. She finished first in 200 meters dash in collegiate record time of 21.8 seconds. That was at the NCAA Outdoor Championships in Eugene, Oregon, at the University of Oregon. Three teammates also won the 4x400 meter relay. Steiner is a two-time indoor champion in the 200. She beat SEC titleist Faber Ofili in the event. Abby's time was the fastest women's 200-meter dash in the world this year. Florence Griffith-Joyner, Pojo, owns a world record time of 21.34, set in the 1988 Olympics. Now that's a long time ago, 1988 Olympics. Florence Griffith-Joyner set the all-time 200-meter record for women. Time flies. Steiner won the bronze medal in the 100-meter dash at 11.08. And that was a very quick race because all three of the top three kind of leaned forward at the end. And so it was almost like a photo finish. She finished in third place. But the 200 meters was her best race. And, of course, in a relay, she runs the 400. Man, she's awesome. And hopefully that will I think she's hitting her peak right now, her stride. So that's a result of good coaching and great training to run at your best at this time of the year, June and July, to get ready for those world championships or whatever at the same place, Oregon. Major League Baseball standings. What about those Yankees? Yankees! You know, in 2020, the Dodgers were 43-17 in the regular season, which Mark Mancini doesn't count, and they went on to win the World Series. Well, this season, the Yankees are 44-16. After 60. Man, that's a fantastic record. Jays 35-24 in the American League East, 8.5 back. And the Rays at 35-25, 9 back. But the Yankees at 44-16. What an amazing start. You know, their ERA is 2.8 as a team. Who said the Yankees don't have pitching? Aaron Judge, 24 homers. I think he's close to between, 46 and 50 RBIs this year. So he's betting on himself, and so far it's looking very good. Betting on that huge contract, Aaron Judge, who went to Fresno State. He was a real dog. He's having quite a year. As is, Rizzo's only hitting about 210, but he has 21 home runs for the Yankees. So everything right now is falling together for them because their players are healthy. We'll see what happens from here. They're on, but 44-16 is very magnificent in Major League Baseball. AL Central, the Twins at 35-27. The Guardians, Mancini's favorite team, favorite nickname, I should say, 29-27. Hey, he doesn't call Washington the Commanders. He still calls the Washington football team the Redskins. So Twins, 35-27. Guardians, 29-27, quite a ways back. AL West, Astros, 37-23, like Los Dodgers. And then we have the Rangers, 28-31, 8.5 back. Really no races at this point in the American League West, or in the American League for sure. Nationally, different story. You have the Mets, who are 40-22. The Braves are 5.5 back. They've won 11 straight. They're 34-27. In the Central, the Cards have leaped over the Brewers at 34-27. Milwaukee is 34-28. They've been struggling as of late. So Milwaukee is a half game back of St. Louis. In the National League West, the Dodgers have lost 5 straight. 1, 2, 3, 4, /5. 5 in a row. 9-13. 37-23. Second place, those Padres. for America's finest city at 37-24, half game back. And then, of course, the Giants are, I think the Giants are within three games, but good performance by San Francisco this weekend. Great pitching. Only allowed four runs in three games against the Dodgers. Yes, the Dodgers scored four runs in three games. Isn't that remarkable? I think it was Saturday's game. I watched a little bit of it. The Dodgers had a lot of people on base, but could not drive them in. I think at one point they were like 0 for 10 with runners in scoring position. So basically, they sucked pretty bad the weekend, and they sucked the two games prior to that. Let's go on from there. Now, you won't hear that on the Dodgers pre- and post-game show, especially from Eric Karros, who I was watching game Saturday when he was doing the commentary on FS1, and it's amazing how many guys came up to bat. They're supposedly their top hitters with runners at first and second or second and third in clutch situations, and then Kimbrel comes in, and Karros spends half his time making excuses for Craig Kimbrel, the fact that he was on paternity leave. That's fine. His wife had a baby. What's that have to do with the fact he can't throw strikes? If he wasn't ready, don't put him in. But what Karros is not saying, and he should know this, is Kimbrel has been a disappointment this entire season with L.A. Now, they got him because they let go of Kenley Jansen, who's doing very well in Atlanta. I know he's pressured to pitch and play in Los Angeles. But Kimbrel has been very inconsistent this season for the Dodgers. He can't get the freaking ball over the plate. That's the main thing. Isn't that kind of like a priority for a pitcher, starter or relief pitcher? When you come to a game, whether you have a one-run or two-run lead, an eighth or ninth inning, throw freaking strikes. Not balls to the outside that Wilson has to dive for. What, did you walk two guys, hit a batter, give up a run, sits down and pouts? I mean, what are they paying him? He hasn't done a good job. ERA is about four or plus. Don't be telling me he's an elite reliever. He used to be an elite reliever. A lot of people used to be something. He used to be an elite receiver, reliever, I should say. And here's another thing. The announcers, every time he gets a save, they got to add, you know, what it is, 325 or so. I really don't care. Do you? I care about what he's doing this year. What he did last year doesn't matter to me. What he did 2 years ago is irrelevant to me. What he did 5 years ago is not important to me, a Dodger fan. What's he doing this year? What's happening this year? Is he getting people out, or is he getting knocked around? He's supposed to be a closer. Now, we know he's not a shutdown closer. He doesn't come in and get one, two, three outs, or pitch to four batters for three outs. It's always got to be dramatic, always got to be a problem, just like the team. Every game is dramatic. Everybody gives them a tough time. I mean, come on. Make some changes in the team. Release some guys. Go on from there. Enough of my rant. My gosh. Their team's so sorry to watch play. Okay, NBA Finals, Game 5 tonight. Celtics, number 2 seed, of course, in the East. He gets the number 3 Warriors. I have a friend who's going to the game. He's super excited because he's a Golden State fan. Jason Tatum this year in the playoffs, 26.1 points per game, 6.7 rebounds, 6.2 assists. He plays about 40 minutes per contest and shooting about 42.6% from the field. Steph Curry for the Warriors doing very well. Now, Steph only averages about 34 minutes per game. They have a lot of depth. He's averaging 27.6 points per game, 5.2 rebounds, 5.7 assists, and 46% from the field. Very good. And so 2-2, so game 5 this evening, very important. And, of course, best of 3 right now. Celtics didn't really get it done the other day. They were leading 94-90. Then they're outscored like 17-3 to close it out. Man, a lot of missed threes, wide-open threes. They would, the guys, top of the key, right corner, left wing, left corner, top of the key, right corner, miss. And Golden State was just smarter down the stretch. That's experience right there. Now the finals, NHL Game 1 coming up. Number 3, Tampa Bay, the Lightning, going for domination against number 1, Colorado Avalanche. So in regular season play, the Avalanche scored 308 goals, which is fourth best in the league. Lightning scored 285, seventh best. Avalanche had 531 assists to 47 for Tampa Bay. NCAA Baseball Super Regionals, Knoxville Super Regional at Lindsey Nelson Stadium in Knoxville, Tennessee. How's it going, Lindsey? Notre Dame, 8, Tennessee, 6. Then Tennessee came back to clobber Notre Dame 12-4, but the Fighting Irish had a lot of fight as they took care and eliminated the top seed Tennessee 7-3, Tennessee, the Volunteers, were the number 1 national seed. Greenville, Super Regional at Clark LeClaire Stadium in Greenville, North Carolina. We had number 8 seed East Carolina, 13 Texas 7. Texas came back to beat them 9-8. So their playoff lives were kind of on the fence right there, Texas. Then I think it was a tough loss for East Carolina on Saturday because yesterday Texas pounded them 11-1. Texas number 9 national seed. At College Station, Super Regionals at Olson Field at Bluebell Park in College Station, Texas. It was number 5, Texas A&M, with a 2-game sweep. Great pitching. They beat Louisville 5-4 and 4-3. Louisville was the number 12 seed. Okay, Blacksburg, Super Regional at English Field in Blacksburg, Virginia. It was Oklahoma 5, Virginia Tech 4. Voltech 14, Oklahoma 8. Sooners came back to whip Voltech 11-2. Voltech, 4th seed, Oklahoma, not ranked. They're ranked to the College World Series. Now, can anybody give me a score of the Stanford game? See if the concluder is playing right now. Stanford was ahead 8-3 in the fifth inning, and that regional, Stanford Super Regional, at Sunken Diamond in Stanford, California. It was UConn 13, Stanford 12. Stanford came back to win game 2, 8-2. Stanford is the number 2 national seed. UConn was not ranked. Game 3 today in Stanford. Chapel Hill, Super Regional at Bosch Chambers Stadium, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Non-ranked, Arkansas 4, NC 1. NC is the number 10th team. Arkansas 4, NC 3. So Arkansas, that series against the 10th-ranked team of the nation. Arkansas, another team that was non-ranked, but they're playing a very good conference in the SEC. Hattiesburg, Super Regional at Pete Taylor Park, Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Non-ranked, Ole Miss 10, Southern Miss 0, and Ole Miss 5, Southern Miss 0. That's right, back-to-back shutouts for Ole Miss over Southern Miss, who had a great record. They play in a weaker league, but Ole Miss came to play, and the Southern Miss was the 11th-seeded team in college baseball. Corvallis Super Regional at Goss Stadium at Coleman Field in Corvallis, Oregon, home of the Oregon State Beavers. Well, the first game at number 14, Auburn 7, Oregon State 5, the number 3 seed, Oregon State 4, and Auburn 3, so Oregon State kind of playing with their playoff live there, winning the game 2-1 run. And then, of course, game right now between Oregon State and Auburn. Okay, what have we got here? Let's see if we have Ann from Huntington Beach. Padres closing in on you, Hef. Yeah. They're not closing on me. They're closing on the Dodgers. I've got nothing to do with it. And the fact is, I think the Padres lost 2 out of 3. Well, the Dodgers lost 3 straight, so they're closing in because the Dodgers can't win a game. It's not like they're going out there and winning 5 or 6 or 7 in a row like the Yankees. Okay, what do we got? David, Virginia Beach. Virginia top 5 left-handers of all time in baseball. Glavine, Kershaw, Koufax, Johnson, Carlton. Who is yours? Okay, top 5 left-handers of all time. You have Glavine, Kershaw, Koufax, Johnson, Carlton. I can't offhand say a top 5 because some of those guys are in the top 5. Definitely Koufax will be in my top 5, and Randy Johnson for sure. Carlton was awesome. Do I include Tommy John? Not necessarily. I think he was a very good pitcher. I think he's kind of an idiot, though, because he was on my show last year, and he was actually the worst guest I've ever had on this program. When I had like a Zoom type of program, he was not very respectful on it, and I told him that. And he tried to cause some problems, and I said, you know, do me a favor. We're going to end this interview, and I went off. So, I mean, he doesn't get high points with me as far as character is concerned. Even though he's a good friend of a friend of mine. But I can't think of a lot of other guys. He had a short career. How about Fernando Valenzuela? I mean, he was great for a short time, at least with the Dodgers, you know, winning a World Series, winning a sign, the whole thing. And then he went on to play with some other teams. So, I mean, the Dodgers would look at him as being one of the top left-handers. Ray from Bloomington, Minnesota, do you ever give Mike Twins credit? Or are you just a homer in Los Angeles? Well, I gave your Twins credit because I said the record is 35-27. So what other kind of credit should I give them? They're 8 games over 500. Does 8 games over 500 impress me for a division winner, a leader? Not really. Does it impress you, Minnesota listener? I mean, the Yankees are 44-16. The Yankees always rout Minnesota in the playoffs. Minnesota is 35-27. Is that a record I'm going to be extremely excited about? And are you? And the Guardians are the second-place team. They're 2 games over 500. That's not a real difficult division. I give them credit for what it's worth. They're having a nice season, not a real good season, not a great season. They're 35-27. What else do you need? The Astros are 37-23. The Mets are having a better year than Minnesota. They're 40-22. The Cardinals 34-27. And the Dodgers 37-23. So only one division winner has a record that's worse than Minnesota. And that's the Cardinals at 34-27. Minnesota's 35-27. So I'm giving them as much credit as they deserve. Hey, Mark, Kenley Jansen's 18 saves. We just kicked your butt in San Francisco this weekend. The fact that he has 18 saves means nothing to me. He didn't get it done when he was in L.A. So he goes to Atlanta. They're a good ball club. Not as much pressure to win there. As good, he's doing a great job. That he performed very poorly against the Giants last year in clutch games. It was good to see him go. So you're not really telling me anything I don't know, Cabby. Thanks a lot for listening. Tim from Corona, California. Time to trade Mike Trout. The Angels need an overhaul. Yes, they do. What should they get from Mike Trout, though? Will you go after two pitchers, two starters, one starter and a reliever? Or are you going for a pitcher and a position player for Mike Trout? Because he's still worth quite a bit on the open market, and he's making a lot of money. And they don't win with him or without him. Okay, what else do we have here? Let's see. Somebody else. Trying to figure out. Okay. Right on. This is Mark Manus on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. Our producer is Mark Mancini. Hello, I'm Mark Heffernan. Our number 347-205-9631. 347-205-9631. So who had a good Sunday? Who had a bad Sunday? One guy that always has a great day is Steve Basford. What's happening? Welcome to MMM.
Well, thank you very much. How are you guys doing out there in sunny, what,
pretty
hot California?
You told me always have a good day.
What's the temperature out there?
Oh, well, it's great today. It's only about 87 degrees.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful in Bakersfield for June. It's awesome. Now, there was a couple days, Friday and Saturday, it was 105. So we cooled down yesterday, 87 today, maybe about 95. I think it'll be 91 tomorrow, 98 back-to-back days, and we'll be in the upper 80s Saturday and Sunday. And hopefully I'm going to Tehachapi to go hiking on Sunday with my son. Unfortunately, my daughter and son-in-law are kind of battling COVID again. Edgar has COVID and Sierra is quarantined, so they won't be joining me. I just found out 2 days ago. She said they both have a lot of body aches, things like that, but she tested negative for COVID, even though she's had it before. And Edgar had it, I think, about a year ago. My brother's had it two or three times. And these people have all been, you know, vaccinated. They've had their booster shots, yet they still get COVID. So figure that out.
Well, yeah, that's crazy. We're going to have 96 degrees here tomorrow and probably mid-90s.
What's up with that? Come on now.
What's
Ohio?
That?
What's
yeah.
up with that?
It's that time of year. That time of year, mid-90s, next couple of days.
Well, I know you play-by-play for Ohio Wesleyan, a private liberal arts college in Delaware, Ohio, founded in 1842 before Mancini was born, by Methodist leaders and Central Ohio residents as a non-sectarian institution. Member of the Ohio Five. I like that, the Ohio Five. So tell me about, you've been at Ohio Wesleyan for quite a long time doing play-by-play. Obviously, you like the people that you work with and for. It's been good. They've been good to you. You've been good to them. Tell me about your experience with Ohio Wesleyan University.
They've been great to me. We'll be starting year number 10 for football this September, and year number 10 also for women's basketball, men's basketball. And then we'll flip over in the spring to baseball and softball, so that keeps me busy for about 9 months per year. But it's a really great gig, a lot of fun. The arena, which is named for Branch Rickey, by the way, who's the most famous person from Iowa Wesleyan. Arena was renovated a couple of years ago, really up to snuff with the air conditioning and the new scoreboard with the players' stats. And the football stadium is a nice place to see a game, too.
Now, is this Division II or Division III?
This is Division III.
How many people do you normally get at your football games?
Attendance-wise?
Well,
I'm guessing about 3,000.
Not bad. How many of them are crazy?
All of them? No. Very avid
well,
fans.
Well, I guess it depends. If it's a home game, of course, most of the people are going to be crazy. because most of the people probably be, you know, for Ohio Wesleyan, they only have the visitors. So I'd say the majority are kind of crazy. What type of a community is Ohio Wesleyan in? Delaware, Ohio, is that a small community?
It is. It's about 20 miles north of Columbus, but it's in Delaware County, which is one of the biggest growing counties in all of the United States. We have the Olentangy School District, which went from one high school to four in the matter of about 14 years. So Southern Delaware County is exploding with houses being built all over the place.
Why
Delaware
are they exploding
itself
so much? What's happening over there? What type of jobs are they offering?
That is a good question. Just traditionally, Central Ohio is a really great place to live, family-wise, and I really can't tell you what kicked it off. I can tell you my city of Dublin started to explode more than 20 years ago when they built a Honda plant in Marysville, and that caused my suburb of Dublin to go from one high school to three. But the other thing that's going to happen in a few years is an Intel plant is going to be built to the county east of my county, and it's going to bring something like 10,000 jobs.
Okay.
And so people in that county, Licking County, are bracing themselves for an explosion of expanding the streets and expanding the utilities. And what are you going to do about new schools? So Central Ohio is really booming lately.
Most of the people that live there right now, are they for progress or do they like it the way it is, kind of a small town community?
In Delaware? Well, in Delaware, you've got the main city, but south of Delaware, in the same county, is where the real explosion is happening. So you got a mix. And, of course, Delaware is highly rural, too, once you get outside the city. So you've got a great variety. But really love the city of Delaware. It's not my home city, but it's like my home away from home. And they've kind of adopted me for the last 10 years, being able to call Ohio Wesleyan games. I get a real kick out of going to Delaware every weekend. So the city of Delaware is a really great community to live in. Nice downtown.
Well, I'm listening to you. Some people were bothering me. Sorry about that. Okay, so we'll talk about the expansion of the area. Well, it happens sometimes. People don't know really what's going on, so they bug me at the wrong time. That doesn't make me real happy. So at any rate, you're in an area that's growing. And I didn't hear your response there because somebody was, distracting me. But there has to be a reason for the expansion. They're building new manufacturing plants, things like that. So you're bringing more people to the area. And sometimes older people, when they live in a small community, they like to say kind of the same, but, you know, progress changes things. Sometimes it makes cities better. Sometimes it brings in more crime. Now, you know, when I was in Bakersfield growing up, it was like 50, 60,000 in the late 60s, early 70s. And at that time, we had about maybe six high schools or so. Highland was built in 1970. We didn't have a high school built for another 20 years. And since then, we've had, I guess, about 10. So I think we have 16 or 17. The newest high school is opening up in late August. And now Bakersfield is bigger than Pittsburgh and a lot of cities that are allegedly, you know, big towns. I mean, they used to be big at one time, and they've dropped in attendance, dropped in population. Cities like Bakersfield, Fresno, here where I live in the Central Valley, they've been growing quite a bit since the mid-70s or so. You can look at a chart and see when everything began jumping upwards. And I think it was like a mid to late 70s, things started just to go over. We're well over 300,000 now. Then you have a lot more, you know, in the metro area. And I personally, I don't think Bakersfield is as good as it offers more than it used to. But I think the city used to be better 25 years ago. We have too many people here now. We have a lot of influx of people from Los Angeles who drive just crazy. And, of course, Mark Mancini and I have talked a lot about how people drive and how they've been since 2020. There's just a lot of rude people out there. There's nice people. There's more people out there that are rude that I meet from time to time. And drivers are just nuts. And I know a lot of them did not come from Bakersfield. They come from other areas. And, you know, during the last couple of years, you had a lot of people that had jobs where they were not meeting in person. So they were doing their jobs from their computers at home. So a lot of people from other areas moved to Bakersfield and did their jobs via computer. So they had residences here, but they actually were working for a company down south. And many of them decided to stay here. What's amazing, and I've told Mark about this because I've been looking for another place, my brother and I, there's just not many vacancies in Bakersfield anymore. It's not because Bakersfield is some Shangri-La, at least not in my opinion, but it's been hard to find vacancies for apartments and condos for the last year and a half. It's like, what's going on? They haven't built enough for all the influx of people coming in. So I don't really know where all the people are coming from. A lot of them are coming from SoCal. I mean, even though our prices have risen, it's still cheaper than living down in L.A. An apartment I lived at 6 years ago that was, let's say, 3-bedroom, 2-bath was $1,250. That same one now is about $1,800 or $1,900. And it's gotten older. It's 6 years older, yet the price has jumped that much. An apartment I lived at in the 90s here in Bakersfield, Southwest, it was only about $350 then. That same apartment, one bedroom now, is I think it's $1,000, a little over $1,000. Same size, same apartment. Because I've been checking out. I've been checking out some place I used to live, you know, maybe 20, 25 years ago, and some newer residences. And you don't really get that much for your money. It's not that great of an investment. But what can you do? I mean, they raise gas prices, residential prices, and people come from other areas. And those people are the ones that, you know, leave me out, people that are not from here. I get a little irritated by that. Yeah. In the past, when I looked for a place, it didn't take long at all. Now it's a long old process, like it's rocket science or something like that. So we've progressed because we have more people here, more businesses, but it doesn't seem like the city planned for that. It seems like at times the city is overwhelmed by crime and a lot of other things. So, you know, I guess if you move to Bakersfield from another area, you haven't been here for a long time, it's probably great to you if you have a nice big house in certain regions of the area and you have a nice job. But if you don't, and it's different. So it depends on your perspective. There's obviously a lot more homeless people here now than there were 10 years ago. And you see that. I go to Fresno, Visalia, even the Bay Area. So it's brought a lot more problems. Bakersfield has a lot more problems than it used to have because it has more people. So is that a good thing? I don't know. I mean, some of the streets here in town are the same. They were built like 60, 70 years ago. They're hard to drive through or turn left or turn right, because they kind of hook through certain areas of the town, especially downtown or east of downtown. It's hard to get from one place to the other because there are some dangerous intersections now where you used to have maybe minimal traffic on certain streets. Now you have heavy traffic the entire day. We have a lot more intersections that are busy now than used to be. So, and it seems like they're always working on, well, I'd say have about 5 or 6 projects working on the roads here in town. We're working on still Highway 58, a different overpass. They've been working on that bridge and that whole thing for at least 2.5 years. I mean, it's come along very, very slowly, but a lot of traffic construction, bridge construction, constantly in the city. So you kind of have to know beforehand if you're going to go to a certain part of the area, southwest, west, northwest, exactly what the traffic is like. Never used to be that case 20 years ago. And it's not like Los Angeles, obviously, but it's brought a lot of problems on with new people coming here over the past 5 years. Steve Basford is my guest on Mark Men Madness here on Blog Talk Radio. The number 347-205-9631, 347-205-9631. You went to Upper Arlington High School in Ohio, and you studied at the Ohio State University. What was it like going to school in Arlington, kind of a small-knit kind of high school?
It's a suburb that is probably one of the wealthier suburbs in the state of Ohio, most famous for producing Jack Nicklaus, if you've heard of him.
Oh,
and
right.
It's only what
the
that?
Golden Bear.
That's right. In fact, our school mascot is the Golden Bears.
Really?
And it's only a couple of miles from Ohio State University. So I basically lived 3 miles from campus for my young life and went to Ohio State University. So it was a nice, easy commute. And yeah, just a great time at Upper Arlington, and that school system continues to get higher and higher grades. I'm talking about academically, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a much tougher curriculum than when I went to there 100 years ago, but that's to be expected, I guess.
Well, I went to high school 150 years ago, so that's okay. Steve, Tommy, you work on you have a book called Buckeye Memories Book, and I know you do stats for The Ohio State University, the Buckeyes football team, and that must be quite, that must have been quite an undertaking to put together a book called Buckeye Memories Book. Explain what it's all about. Do you have like quite a few chapters? Is it a small book or a large book?
326 pages. Took
That's
me
pretty good.
Nine,
pretty good size.
Yeah, it took me 9 months to put together. Took several months to actually get it in print. It covers the years 1968. Buckeyes won a national championship over the Southern Cal Trojans, by the way. They won a national championship.
Southern Cal Trojans. Now, was Rex Kern quarterback for Ohio State at that time?
Yes. Yes, he was. He was a freshman. He was a sophomore. Excuse me.
He was a good runner.
Yeah, in fact, yes, he was. In fact, they had 13 of the 22 starters were sophomores that year and couldn't repeat in 69 or 70. That's another story. But my book covers the years 68 through 2020. That was the pandemic year. I've got a chapter on every year. I've got a capsule on every game. Plus, I inject a lot of my experiences, both as a fan, as a little kid, going to games as a fan, sitting in the stands, and evolving into working on the stats crew. So it's a mix of facts and experiences. And when I say facts, there are over 500 fun facts in the book. So if you're
into
trivia.
And the facts are fun. They're not dramatic. They're fun.
What's that?
They are fun facts, not dramatic facts, in other words.
Fun facts, right. If you like trivia, it's right up your alley.
Okay. Now, you've been a part of The Ohio State University for a long time, dealing with stats and things like that and being a fan. Who's your favorite all-time football coach? Did you like Woody Hayes? I mean, people either hated or liked him. They liked the fact that he won a lot. How would you, and the thing is, how would you compare Woody Hayes with Urban Meyer as far as their style of coaching?
Night and day. One of the
bizarre
facts.
Though. Both are very intense.
What's that?
Both are very intense guys.
Very intense. Yes, there you go. A crazy fact, in the 50s, Woody had a year in which the average number of passing yards per game. Can you take a stab at it?
Oh, in the 50s?
Yeah.
I'd say about 45 yards a game.
18 yards per game.
Only 18, wow.
Yeah, and that's not even one good pass these days. So, interestingly enough, Urban Meyer, wide-open offense, but he liked to establish the run first, which I liked. They had
so
Ezekiel Elliott. Yeah, Ezekiel Elliott, a couple of monster years, J.K. Dobbins, Mike Weber, Carlos Hyde. So there's your comparison. As far as the ground attack, as you said, both men very intense, both men interested in academics. Woody probably with a bigger reputation of academics, very much into his players getting their degrees.
Huh.
But obviously both
guys now play for 3 years and move on because the money's there. Back then, it was more important to, you know, for players to graduate, and it was more the thing to do. And coaches probably had more interest in players graduating then. Now it's more, winning and developing players for the next level, especially Alabama. You go to Alabama, Saban's going to tell you, you may not start here. It's going to be intense competition, but I will prepare you for the next level if you're interested in it. Just look at how many players have been drafted over the last 10 years. In the first, second, third round that have played Alabama. Look what they've done here at the university. Look where they've gone. Look at the money they're making. So he has the facts to back up his claims, Saban. Whether the parents like him or not, I think he'll say things the way they are and be upfront with them. And they probably run very similar to a pro-type situation, have great support from the administration, fantastic facilities, big-time football. I mean, Alabama's a more exciting, their program, and more popular than many teams in the NFL. They really are. More people care about Alabama football than most of the teams in the NFL, and they're more exciting. And the reason why? Because they win or they have a chance of winning every year. You don't see them going 1-11, you know, every 3 years. They just kind of reload. Now, the NFL people will not like what I say, but I say the truth.
Alabama did go 6-6.
Just like before he came on, I talked about the Dodgers and other teams. It's not – see, the thing about me is I rely on the eye test myself. And then I mix that with stats. So I watch the Dodgers actually too much. I watch them a little bit here and there, you know, maybe 4 or 5 innings. I pretty much know all their players, what they can, what they can't do, and what they are doing. And I think a lot of people think they're automatically going to have, like, they have a magic wand, and the guys hitting 210 and 220 right now are all of a sudden going to be great hitters before the rest of the year. That's not necessarily the case. And all they tell me, you know, Mark is only 60 games. Well, I'm very aware of that. And I play baseball myself. I've been a Dodger fan for a long time. Generally, you can say that over the first maybe 20 games. You kind of establish who you are over the first 60, 80 games, halfway through the season. And the problem is it's harder for your average to go up the more at-bats you have. It fluctuates more during the first part of the year. Guys that are struggling now are probably going to struggle most of the season. And then they may get better. It'd be very hard going from 210 or 215 to 290 by the end of the year. You realize what you'll have to hit to raise your average to like 70 points. People don't understand that. And the thing about the Dodgers is that, like a high school team I cover this year, they'll score 11 runs in one game, get 17 hits. Then they'll score like 12 runs combined their next four. So if you look at their runs per game, it looks pretty good. But the fact is they're not consistent, and people don't really understand that. You got to look at all their scores. They're scoring 2-2-0 in 3 games against the Giants. Didn't do much 2 games prior to that. Coming up, you're going to see them score 8 or 9 runs in a game. They may score another game 7. And then they'll score 1, 2, and 3. And I don't know what the record will be in those games. They either are great or they're very pathetic offensively. Now, on paper, everybody thought they'd be a World Series contender. Now, I thought they should have been, but they've kept a lot of guys that are part of the World Series team a few years ago. Whether the guys are older or injuries, I don't really know. I've heard all the excuses. I don't really know. And my brother has a disagree with me. He doesn't really watch the Dodgers. But a lot of their young guys that are in their prime really haven't developed like I thought they would, and that includes Cody Bellinger, Will Smith. I don't put Lux in that category yet because he's still kind of young, and he's hitting 290. He just doesn't hit with power. But so some of the young guys are pretty good, and Walker Buehler, number one. Urias, they were better last year than the year before. I know they have injuries, but they've been disappointed this year. I mean, Urias was 23 last year. I know he had a lot of run support. This year is 3-6. Yeah, he doesn't get a lot of runs, but, you know, here's the whole thing. You can see he only gave up 3 hits. The problem is 2 of the hits were home runs. You got to keep the ball in the ballpark, Hula, you know that. Same with Buehler, gives us a gopher ball a lot. So a lot of the guys are not performing as well as they did last year or 2 years ago. Younger players. Older players, sometimes they're just kind of going to fade a little bit. But if you listen to the pregame and postgame, they make a lot of excuses for the team. Like automatically, they're going to get it together. Maybe, maybe not. There's nothing guaranteed in sports. You always have somebody new that comes up every year. Now, last one, like 11 in a row. Last year, they won 88 overall. They beat the Dodgers. Dodgers beat them the year before, and they had Freddie Freeman. Now, they're getting hot, and they're in a tough division with the Mets. The Mets have been solid, despite not having two of their best pitchers the entire year. The Angels, you know, what do they lose, like 14 in a row, and they play well against the Mets, but they're 3 or 4 games under 500. They may never get over 500 the rest of the year. I mean, Trout's done well when he's played, but they don't win with Mike Trout. They don't win when he plays. They don't win when he doesn't play. He really kind of irrelevant as far as they're winning. And management likes him because they think he brings in people, and it's good for him because he's the top dog for the Angels. They've been in one series his entire career, and they got swept in that, and he was 1-for-12. And I think ESPN spent 45 minutes on Mike Trout prior to their game yesterday. And I thought to myself, what's their record right now? I checked it on my phone, and I saw they were like 20-33. I know you're in love with Mike Trout, and he has these home runs and RBIs and this and that, but with me it's important, what are your wins and losses? Okay, I mean, the pitching was pretty good for a while this year. It's kind of faded, and they got rid of their manager, but they got shut out a few of those games. But it's not happening, okay? It's not happening. Regardless of what he does, the team's not winning. To me, that's the most important thing to bring people in, winning baseball, not one guy having nice stats. Stats don't win as an entire team. Now, I don't know, maybe he's just a guy that puts together, you know, nice stats, but he's not really a leader. Some guys are leaders. Kirk Gibson was a leader for the Dodgers years ago. Kirk Gibson. He didn't have the stats that Mike Trout had. He didn't have an overall career that Trout had, but he was very good in the clutch. And he played 120%. Mike Trout was a lot more talented than Kirk Gibson had as a baseball player. But Gibson was on teams that won. And Trout hasn't been. And Trout wanted to stay with the Angels. Knowing what they had coming up, he wanted to stay there and make big money. And basically, within his heart, he knew he was going to a team that maybe at the best would challenge for a playoff spot. That's about it for the rest of his career. So you go to the Dodgers or a team like Houston, whether you like them or not, or the Yankees, you're going to go to a team that expects to win. Mm-hmm. Their priority is to win, not just in the division, but to be a World Series contender. And if they say that's their priority, they're going to go after them. They're not just going to talk a good game. The Angels didn't ever talk about being a World Series contender because they're not. I mean, that'd be a joke. I don't see the PR department saying that. They have to sell tickets. They got a nice TV contract. With them, it's all about, well, maybe we can contend for a playoff spot. You don't hear the Dodgers saying that. And to me, that's not good enough for the Dodgers to say, oh, we're going to contend for a playoff spot. So what? Now, I know that a team can get hot and win, and that's in. They don't have to have the best record in the league or be a division winner. But there you have a different in philosophy of two organizations. What did the Minnesota Twins say? Oh, maybe we can win a division and get to the playoffs. That's pretty much probably all they'll do. They never beat the Yankees. So everybody has their different quotes and their different mantras. I like teams that say they want to be a World Series contender and get the players to do it. That's where I look. So you talk about Buckeye memories. You're also working on a second book about the 2,000-plus games you've covered, Steve Bassford. How does that differ? Well, that's more of a personal thing, obviously. That's how it differs from Buckeye Memories book. So this is more about your career, the people you worked with, the people you've met along the way, and all the games that you've covered and done play-by-play for at Ohio Wesleyan. I guess it also includes some of your high school work, too. So the second one seems to be more close to your heart than the Buckeye Memories book, because it's more about you and what you've done.
That's exactly right. In fact, your timing is really good because I just submitted it a couple hours ago to the publisher.
Sometimes my timing is pretty good, you know.
And with any luck, it'll be out in a month or so. But you're right on.
That's good.
I made the comment to someone else that this one was a lot more fun to do because it is about my own experiences. And
you have a lot of photographs in the new book.
There's a limit of 10
photographs. Okay.
There's a limit of 10 photographs. I'm kind of cheap. But there'll be a photograph of myself with Bob Costas and Fred Taylor. Okay. I like the name drop, but by the way, I worked two games for Bob Costas, two basketball games. Worked a game for Harry Callis and Joe Theismann. That was the 1981 Liberty Bowl.
Was Costas' hair combed perfectly when you took that picture with him?
Absolutely.
Right on.
So I figured out that he and I started our career like the same calendar year, 1975.
Really?
I did my first game in 1975. But you're right, it includes Ohio Wesleyan. It includes my high school games. I do play-by-play for high school football and basketball. It includes all my stats work. One time I was a parabolic microphone guy. You know what I'm talking about? I've been a timeout coordinator.
Yeah.
And I was actually offered a gig once to work at bull riding. I have no idea what that entailed, but I had to turn it down because there was an Ohio State game that day.
Well, let me ask you, what excites you about play-by-play? You've been doing it for a long time. Why did you get into it? And take us on the journey. What excites you? What's so captivating about play-by-play of a high school and college level?
It's just being able to paint a picture to people and try to be creative and have fun at the same time. You know what I'm talking about when you say have fun, right?
Oh, sure.
So it's all that stuff and sharing the history. I'm a history nut, so sharing what's happened in the past with people to get a feel for the tradition of what you're carrying. Seeing young kids in high school, you know that they're slaving away in their classes. The high school that I carry is very in tune with academics. So all the players have high grade point averages. Likewise, at Ohio Wesleyan, the teams have very high grade point averages. As you probably know, in Division III, there are no academic scholarships. So the players are playing for the love of the game. Just great
the
people.
The love of the game. I love it.
Yeah. The coaches.
Hey, maybe
you
can answer
with.
My question. Nobody try to answer my question. I did something twice in the last week that I've never done before. It's kind of in the entertainment field. What do you think it is?
You were a ventriloquist.
I know.
Nope.
No, it has to do with my voice.
You said you went hiking, right? Is that it?
No. No, actually, I sang karaoke.
Yeah, it was close, right?
Solo. Now, I sang with a friend of mine probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I think we did I'm a Believer. So, but this was solo. I sang one song with her, and I didn't do a very good job. It was the first one up there. We were trying to sing that song by, can't remember. It was a duet, and we kind of messed up a lot, so I did some solo. Yeah, I sang, I think I sang about 4 songs solo at this place called The Junction here in Bakersfield, and then we did it again a couple of nights ago. I was terrible on Dream On by Aerosmith. I didn't realize that Tyler sung that high, totally out of my range. She said my voice level is like baritone, and I understand that, but you know, Steve, it's different listening to a song and singing along with it at home than being up on stage and hearing it and then trying to match, you know, the vocals. I try to match the vocals of the person I do the cover for. I did okay for a while, but I got to this point where I was just singing way out of my league, way high. Then I had a little musical interlude, and then I dropped down a little bit for the end. But I didn't do a good job on Dream On. I do much better on more blues type of stuff, Bad Company, Silver, Blue, and Gold, and a few other ones. But I have about 5 in my head right now I've written down that I'll practice, so next time I go. But I have to work on songs where the lead vocalist has more of a lower voice. I can get up high once in a while, but not through half the song. Dream On, I love the song. It's just not good for me. And I didn't realize until I was up there, and I was telling myself, dude, what are you doing? I'm talking to myself as I'm singing. What are you doing? It's way too high for you. And I thought, am I really annoying these people here? Because you don't know how you're coming across. And then had a little musical sequence there. And then I kind of shifted down a little bit lower as the song ended and did a lot better. And the guy said I did well, but the guy playing all the music off his computer, he's a great sax player, and he's a fantastic singer. Now he sings R&B. Now, I love R&B, but I can't sing all those songs because some of the guys sing falsetto. So I have to stay away from that. So I'm kind of limited on my style, but it's totally different. You know, it's entertaining. And like I was talking to some people, I said, you know, some individuals with a very good speaking voice can't sing very well and vice versa. And they said, you sing? I said, not really. I said, I try to sing backup. I said, I have to pick certain songs that are, you know, that correlate with my style, my voice. And I knew about that walking up there, but for some reason with Dream On, I think I tried to go too high. I didn't have to go that high in some of the areas, but I was going higher and higher and higher, and I thought, God, this must sound bad. And fortunately, I caught myself. I didn't get nervous about it. I caught myself and just kind of did my thing. Because the main thing, it's like broadcasting, is doing karaoke, is to have fun. But I don't want to go up there and totally suck, if you know what I mean. If I can go up there, I got to be halfway decent. And it's the same with broadcasting, even though singing is much more difficult for me than talking into a microphone. If I'm broadcasting the game, whether it's high school or JC or college, whatever like that, or doing a podcast, I want to have fun, but I also want to do an exceptional job. Some days are better than other days, but singing is more difficult for me than talking. And I'm sure I'll get better at it, but it's not like I'm going there to be discovered by anybody. I'm just going there for fun. But there were some people that chose some great songs, and they were very flat. I didn't tell them that. I thought to myself, good, I'm not the worst singer here. But let me tell you, I have a lot of respect for singers, especially those who sing a cappella, because that's a very tough thing to do, to be in front of people and to sing, whether you're singing without music or with music, to get the right pitch and for your style to work with the song and to line up with the lyrics and the whole thing. It's not really that easy. It seems easy, but it's really not. But I think I even got better from the first song that I sang that I flubbed up on, and that's okay because there are people there that are not that good at the place where I go to. I'm not going to be in singing competitions or anything like that. But I'm not terrible, but I'm certainly not great. So if I could be good at it, that's fine. It's just something else to do. That's fun. But it's a lot different than speaking, that's for sure. I'm much better with a mic in front of me and just talking, blabbering. When you sing, you can't make any excuses. You can't say anything that's going to cause people not to listen. You can't. In other words, you can't go and hide anywhere. You're up there on stage. You're up there on stage. So basically, like I told myself, dude, you better bring it when you go up there and sing it. Have fun, but you got to bring it, you know, somewhat. I tell it to myself, go up there. Hey, because I know how you are, but sometimes in my sense, I'm my own worst critic. I have fun with it, but I pretty much know what I can, what I can't do. Even though there are times I try to kind of go over the border and do something different, which is cool. But in the back of my mind, in front of my mind, it's the fact that you got to go up there and deliver no matter what you do. And I'm not going to try to be a stand-up comic because that would be the world's worst for me. But I don't know if you've done anything like that. But you know, nobody had answered who was listening to the program. And I said it wasn't inappropriate or anything like that. But, yeah, I had done some of that singing two or three years ago before the pandemic. But that was with my friend. And she's a great singer, a fantastic singer. And so I was hopefully the song we sang the other day together, I kind of messed up more than she did. So I think she's let me on my own. I said, just keep me on my own. You do your own stuff later on. And so she does a great job. She has pitch. She's been trained, vocally trained. So she's at a different level than me. So I have to be, if I'm going to sing something with her, I have to be better what I do, the harmony, things like that. I don't want to mess it up for her because she's a person that's done some singing, done opera, and she's up there for exercise and to probably be noticed by other people. So I don't want to mess it up for her. It's like, you know, it's being a broadcaster or being an athlete. It's also, you know, like a team game. It's not just about you. I mean, a person's playing music. He plays the track. And they have, what's cool, they have screens in front of you where you can see the lyrics. If they didn't have the lyrics, I'd really be in bad shape because as I sang some of those songs, I didn't realize that he was singing that song. I thought I did okay on Angie by the Rolling Stones' Mick Jagger. And I said, Angie. I didn't say Angie. I said, Angie. Just like he did. I thought I did okay on that. I'm going to try that song again eventually because I think I can get better at it because I used to listen to it all the time. And by the way, talking about history, back in the early 70s when I was taking a radio class at Bakersfield College, when they had that type of a class, we had turntables back then, Techniques turntables, and we just played 45s and 33 RPMs. And I probably forgot to switch the RPM. And I think I was going to play the Angie 45 RPM, you know, by the Stones. And so I'm talking on the air and I flip it down there and I probably forgot to switch to 45 RPM. It was on 33 RPM. So it started off, Angie. I flip the thing down, flip back up, everything was cool. And I always remember that. So that's been in my head all these years. We're talking like 47 years ago. So I told myself, you got to sing that song. And so I kind of practiced it during the week. I thought I did okay with that, because he doesn't have a great voice, Jagger, but he has style. He has style. And obviously the group has style. They've been doing it for a long time. I thought that was one of his better songs as far as he was pretty passionate about it. And it's more like a, you know, like a love song, a lullaby. I also like the song by Kiss, Beth. And you know, that guy has a gravelly voice. I could kind of track that down. We'll see what I do from now on. And I, like I told my friend, I'm not going to go there every night or back-to-back nights. I'm just going to show up once in a while. I don't want to be a regular, but I'll show up from time to time and see what I can do. But I want them to know me too much when I go in there. I'm just weird about stuff like that. So you talked about, Steve, about why play-by-play excites you. We talked about Ohio Wesleyan University, a high academic school, like most schools that are in Division III, they are. And players, athletes don't get scholarships. We have quite a few schools like that here in California. One is Fresno Pacific, which competes in the PacWest Conference. And that's a pretty good conference of Division III schools. They have one in Hawaii, I think. And that conference has come a long way in a variety of sports. You talked about your two books, which one has already been out, the Buckeye Memories book. There are a new one. You hoped that it will be in the stands, be available for people another month and a half. Second book is about the 2,000-plus games you worked as a play-by-play broadcaster, either in high school or college and things like that, and you've been at Ohio Wesleyan for 10 years, so obviously the people like you. You're doing something right.
Yeah, go figure, right?
No, that's cool. I mean,
you
haven't gotten 20 fights with coaches. You haven't gotten 20 fights with fans like me. I'm just kidding, of course. But, Now, sometimes, let's say, it's hard. It's difficult at times being around the same university or around the same people for 10 years. Very few people, I mean, today, last in the same job for 10 years. And then they may be promoted in different departments of their job. But a lot of people, you know, are moving and, you know, shaking and moving every 3, 4, or 5 years, especially in broadcasting. So I think it's very commendable to be at one school for 10 years. Because you can be at a school and do everything right, and they can still get rid of you. You know how that is. You bring in a new athletic director, a new president, and they just want their own people in there. It has nothing to do with what type of a job you've had or you've done or your character and things like that. They just make a move to make a move. I know about that being in radio. Guys in suits come in, and I get scared. And back in the day, they start throwing cartridges around and saying, it's going to be called this. It was 97.7 FM. Now it's going to be called 98 FM. Or say it was 99.3 frequency, and now it's going to be called Century FM. And you just kind of say, okay. And then they tell you like an hour later, you got nothing to worry about. Your jobs are secure. And then the following Monday, oh, did they tell me a lie or what? So last hired were the first fired. You're part of 3 or 5 people that he acts, yes. By people that said, I had nothing to worry about, okay. So how can people get in touch with you, Steve Bassford?
On Twitter, I am SteveRB10. That's the best way to follow me. I'm on Facebook. You can check out my websites. If you Google Steve's College Football page, you'll see my adventures of trying to see all of the 131 FBS teams in person. I'm up to 125. And I've got websites on movies. I've got websites on humor. So if you go to the Steve's College Football page, it'll link you to the other two websites, the movies and the website on humor.
Now, Steve, you love the Ohio State University because they beat the University of Southern California Trojans in the Rose Bowl so many years ago.
That's
how many
right,
you feel
man,
like that? How many you feel like Fresno State guy? I'm not a USC fan. I'm surrounded by USC fans, but I'm not really a Trojan fan. I like their campus, and they treated me well when I did a Super Regional there years ago. I've never done anything at UCLA, so I got to give them a free pass. The USC people were very nice to me when I did a Super Regional against BYU. And in that Super Regional, they play on Friday, Saturday, and Monday. So I went back to Bakersfield after the first two nights, and I had to come back on Monday. I had to get a day off from work, and they granted it to me. Because they don't play on Sundays, BYU, and USC won that Super Regional. But they're fine to me. Steve, thanks a lot for being on Markman Madness. Take care.
Hey, thank you. Anytime.
Okay, man. Talk to you later. Okay, you've been listening to Markman Madness. I think I was more mad today on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. Our producer is Mark Mancini. I'm Mark Heffernan. You can get in touch with me by going to my email site, sportswrapnet@yahoo.com or markheff20@gmail.com. sportswrapnet@yahoo.com or markheff20@gmail.com, markheff20@gmail.com. Okay, it was a lot of me today. I had a lot of things to get off my chest. Kind of a different type of program today. I guess that's what happens when I get interrupted when I'm trying to interview somebody on my program. And I had the door open because it's a nice breeze, and I had to close it, try to close it once. It opened up. I had to close it again. You probably heard the slam. And then somebody's asking, what are you doing? And I guess they didn't know I was doing a podcast. That's what I was doing. So that threw me off, but like a good sport, I get back into it. When I fall down, I get back up. That's what you should do, too, in your life, in your profession. Thanks a lot for listening today. We'll be back next week at 5 o'clock here on Blog Talk Radio. For Markman Madness, driven by Mancini Media, I'm Mark Heffernan. God bless you, and thanks for listening.